to North Shore Sports Night on a Monday. I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer Bill Proposky. We do not have a halftime show, and I think most sports fans would be okay with that. Tim, how are you doing?
Good, and I'm not singing. Just in case you were wondering.
I tell you what, I'll my age is pretty evident when I say, what the hell was that halftime show last night? Holy Toledo.
A little underwhelming. I mean, he's extremely talented, but it was rather, I spent all that time reading anyways, but.
Yep.
Look up, the music wasn't overpowering. She did all of her hits, which I had no idea, one hit from another. But, it was all very subdued, you know?
I just don't understand what all the balloons were, the balloon costumes, they were the sheets. They were all wearing white sheets, and there were thousands of them. And, you know, I got to tell you, Tim, again.
It's like the invasion of the Michelin Man.
Yeah, exactly. And when I go to a, it's funny, when I go to a concert all my life, even when I was a young kid, I love heavy metal, kick-ass, rock and roll. And when I go to a concert, I want to see the band play and hear the music. I don't care about dancing people. I just don't. And, you know, so much of that now, that entertainment involves, and it has for a long time, it involves people dancing. And it doesn't do anything for me. I want to hear the music. But anyway, good game, though.
Yeah, I feel bad for Philly, you know, that it came down to a questionable holding call that was made by the back judge who was out of bounds, you know, down around the goal line. That's the guy that threw the flag.
Yep. Well, as
you know, he was noticeable all game long because he was always the one that was coming up and chirping to the referee and pointing things out and everything. And I like to go back and see how many flags he actually threw during the course of the game.
And there's been a conspiracy among Eagles fans anyway, or not necessarily Eagles fans, but anti-Chiefs fans, I would think, you know, about some of the calls that the Chiefs have gotten. But it all evens out, Tim. You know, my dad used to talk about the law of averages in sports, and, you know, for 40 years, the Patriots didn't really get a lot of calls. And then for 20 years, they got them all. So, you know, I would say they
got them all, but certainly they got... They got more than they had in the past of being a good team. You usually get those.
Well, I go back to the Tuck rule, and that one was like, okay, who came up with that one? But
it was in the book, and the Patriots knew about it.
Yep.
You know, you say what you want about whether it was a good call or not, but as defined in the rule book, and that's what governs play, that was an incomplete pass.
Yep.
And so it was not a bad call. It was a gutsy call where the referee made the right call. Okay. But it certainly saved the Patriots season.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it took guts to make that call. That's the call. Okay. And, you know, Brady said it right. You know, we knew the rule. Maybe they should have read the rule book a little bit better.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And I bet you a lot of teams started to pay a lot more attention to the rule book after that.
Well, I know they started to pay more attention to Bill Belichick after that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Like, what's this guy doing?
Better pay attention to the rule book, because if there's one guy that knows the rule book, Bill Belichick.
What else do you see in the world of sports, Tim? We're going to talk with Mike at the bottom of the hour, so we can save Celtic talk for later. But, you know, spring training is about to begin. I don't know if the Red Sox have really improved. There's a lot of hype around their pitching staff now, which I'm surprised to think that there's any hype around anything about this team. And then on the other side of the thing, you've got two new coaches, an offensive line coach for the Patriots, who looks very experienced and capable, and of course Bill O'Brien's coming back, and then you got the Bruins playing well. I don't know what catches your eyes.
Well, you know, certainly bringing back Adrian Klemm, a former offensive lineman for the Patriots. He was at, I believe, the University of Colorado as their offensive line coach, and if you know anything about college linemen, if it's not BC, it's Colorado. you know, with young guys at linemen are getting drafted from.
I didn't know that, no.
It certainly has a heritage of producing quality offensive linemen. And so I think that's it's a good move. We'll see how it works out. You know, Clem was coached by one of the greatest offensive line coaches in the history of football. You know, and we'll see if that influence has rubbed off. And it should be, you know, exciting. They've made a whole lot of other big name splashes in terms of coaches, and I don't think you're going to see a whole lot. Everything will be rather quiet, I think, on the Patriots front. But the Red Sox, geez, who the hell knows? You know, with Sales is down there letting it rip, you know, but letting it rip now in February is not letting it rip in April, May, June, July, and August. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is that going to bear fruit? Well, we have to wait and see. We have to wait and see. So, and the other pitching, it's not young, it's not really done. We're going to see. You know, there's so many. I think there's more questions about this Red Sox team than we've seen in years. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting spring training to see how they hammer out positional play. Is Kiki Hernandez going to go to shortstop, or is he going to go to second base? You know, it's like, because you're not going to have Scherzer to play second base at the beginning of the season. He's going to be out. You know, you don't have a shortstop. There's just a lot of open-ended questions with the Sox.
Well,
but interesting, some of the new rules came out today. The shift is now no longer allowed, which means you're going to see a lot more hits by guys as they get the ball through the holes that weren't there. And you're going to see a lot of bloopers falling in because they're not going to have the softball defense anymore. And looks like the pitch clock is going to be implemented. And there was one more thing I heard today. Every tie game that goes to extra innings, a runner will start at second base every inning that they play. And I really hate that. That is so non-baseball. Yeah. That is like Little League, high school. Let's get this game over with,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
I think that's just crap.
And we'll see how that plays out and, you know, what the fans think of it. Coach, I want to just mention we have one high school score in today, and it is an absolutely big one. In Division I boys hockey, Catholic Memorial has beaten St. John's Prep by a score of 5-3. So that means that CM is the Catholic Conference winner, and they went into that game 1-2. In other words, actually 2-1. Memorial was in power rankings in D1. They were rated number 2, and St. John's Prep was rated number 1. And obviously that probably will change. Although the Prep, you know, they've split the season series. It's one apiece now, and I'm guessing the rubber game will be the championship game for D1, state championship. But second loss of the year for the Prep. They're now 14-2. Catholic Memorial now 15-2, I believe, or possibly even 16-2. I haven't checked their record. But CM defeats St. John's Prep by a score of 5-3 this afternoon, and we've been blessed with being able to talk with Coach Christian Hansen many times, and we'll talk with him again. We're not going to have him tonight, but we will be checking in with him again. So that's the
back door of the Herald said that was going to be the game to go to if you had the time. He said it was going to be a war, and it proved out to be just that.
Yep, and another war we're going to talk about in a couple of minutes. I think that's how it was described. At least it was in a pregame by Winthrop High School hockey coach Dale Dunbar, who's also an NHL agent, in a game with Gloucester. And both Gloucester coach Derek Geary and coach Dunbar were talking very highly of the other team, and I guess it turned out to be quite the hockey game. So we'll be talking with Coach Dunbar, whose team, by the way, is currently ranked number one in D4 MIAA hockey power rankings. So it's all coming down to the wire, Tim. We got, three games at the most, maybe four possibly left in the regular season already for both basketball and hockey.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast, you know, you turn your head and all of a sudden it's half over. You know, go 360 and all of a sudden you're going into the playoffs. So it's gonna be interesting once it all settles that we see who's gonna be ranked where and who's gonna be playing where.
Yeah, it's been fun, and it's going to be fun the rest of the way. So let's take our first break of the evening. We'll come back and talk with Winthrop High School boys hockey coach Dale Dunbar. We'll be right back.
We are MSONewsSports.com, the North Shore's news and sports website, featuring North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, the North Shore and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk shows, hosting on Thursdays, North Shore Today, the area's multimedia, community-based daily magazine. Our connections feature interview segments. Spread the word about MSONewsSports.com as we support North Shore communities with our exclusive content, powered by Moynihan Lumber, Beverly, North Reading, and Plastow, New Hampshire.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we welcome in good friend Dale Dunbar, the Winthrop High School boys hockey coach. And, Coach, let's start right away with that game against Gloucester. Both you and Coach Geary predicted it was going to be a tremendous high school game, and it looks like it was.
Yeah, it still was. It was very hard fought. We knew what we were getting. We were able to get a couple of more than they did, but it was overall a great game. I don't think anybody walked away from that game, aside from the score, saying it wasn't a great hockey game between two very good hockey teams.
I love it when you simplify so much the perspective of the game and bring it down to what it's all about. I read in the paper that Coach Geary was saying what they didn't want was for you guys to get off to a fast start in the first period, and apparently you did.
Yeah, we were fortunate, we predicated our game on hopefully starting the game on time, establishing, zone time, getting pucks to the net. And, we were able to do that. And like last time, we got a 2-0 lead and then they started to come back. And, it's a very good hockey team. You cannot have any lapses because they'll take advantage of it. And, yeah, it was a very good hockey game, and special teams, played a part. But overall, it was a hard-fought game, physical game, and it went right down to the end.
Tim?
Rick? Coach, as you look at Gloucester, because, Rick and I were both spent so much time there, what did you see as the strength of Gloucester's team?
Derek's, he keeps them. That's a very well coached hockey team. There's not many holes. The thing that stuck with me the last time I talked with Ricky said how they seem to have found their identity and losing, a couple of really good kids off last year's roster. It's a chance for others to grow. And we sort of had the same thing. We were talking about it early in the year, creating our identity. So I think you saw two very good hockey teams, getting hot at the end of the year. And let's face it, with only a point separating us going into that game, everybody had to play. Everybody had to come to play. And I think our top end guys on both sides really, really played well. I like Cunningham. I like, you know, Jewel and a couple of those kids really, and I pulled them aside after and said, you know, you guys played great. And, you know, again, it's a bounce here, a bounce there, you know, a penalty or an opportunity here and there. That's what it comes down to. And that's what I'm sure they practice that. We practice game situations every day. And, you know, at the end when we went to our box plus one, when they pulled the goalie, I was, you know, I said, guys, I don't even have to draw this up. This is what we do every single day. We practice these situations. Now we have to execute it when it comes time. So just take a deep breath, go out there and do what you were drilled to do. I mean, do what you were taught. And, but don't tense up. Just play our game. And that was, I think, our message. And it's been all years. Just play our game. So we did, and we were fortunate.
Coach, you mentioned, you know, talking to a couple of the other kids. And I know that, Paul Ingram used to do that, when he coached Gloucester High School football. That means a lot to, not only the kid on the opposition, but your players see how much you understand what the other guys are doing as well. And that's sort of a, I don't know how to even describe it, but it's a trickle-down effect on respecting efforts by people and giving people credit for being who they are and how hard they try.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you know, you're going to get some great individual efforts, and they had definitely had some in both games. And you know what? I respect that. I mean, it sticks out to me when I see, you know, our kids or our opponent do some little things, but some very cerebral things that lead to, you know, either lead to a great play defensively or lead to some really good plays offensively. I see that they understand the game and that was evident in both games, but especially this game. I think I had a little bit more of a perspective on what we were doing in our building with the magnitude of what was on the line. So I sort of dissected almost every shift. But those, you know, those kids along with our high-end kids made some really, really nice plays on both sides of the puck. And, you know, we didn't expect anything more than a one-goal hockey game. And, you know, we were fortunate when they cut it to one, we were able to get one right back almost. And that, again, that shows some maturity. You know, you get scored on, you got to get right back at it. Don't feel bad. And again, these situations are going to present themselves, and we try to practice them every day so we're not overwhelmed in a game situation.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I was just looking at your roster, and I take it that Silverman and Hayes are on the first line?
Yes, they are.
Okay, who's the center for them?
A senior, Colin Banfield. We've had some adjustments there all year because I didn't want to load up one line. I needed to spread to two lines. So, you know, you have your high-octane line that's just going to go and have their foot on the gas. But Colin really stabilizes that line. He stays back. He keeps the play in front of him. He's seldom caught on the wrong side of the puck. He's had, he's emerged as a really good face-off man. He's been great in the dots and, penalty killing. So now, you know, we've been juggling some players back and forth depending on the situation of the game, coming back after a penalty or a power play. But, you know, he's done a great job for us and he really lets the other two just go and create. He's the stabilizing force back there.
Well, it's evident to see he has 5 points, he has 5 assists, so obviously he doesn't have a concern for himself in terms of putting the ball in net because he knows he has 2 linemen that can take care of that business.
Exactly, and you know, again, you know, it's you know, I even as a player and as a coach, I took a lot of pride in defense, and you know that's what he does, and to be the third man back, we try not to give up odd man rushes. He's always in position. And again, it lets Pete and Jack, you know, create below the dots and coming out of our own end, you know, hopefully we're attacking in numbers, but Colin can distribute it too. And he's very selfless. He just lets them go and it's working. So, you know, I don't want to change something that's not working. And, he's, again, you get those selfless guys that just understand what it takes to win. And that's usually the glue the glue in your lineup.
You have free... You know, go ahead, Tim.
When I put the ball for Jim Doherty at Don Savio, and his advice to me was, give the ball to somebody who can shoot.
Yeah, I mean, that's good advice. Obviously, Pete and Jack, you know, if you look at, they probably account for 90% of our scoring. And, you know, it's, but yeah, like I told Rick, you know, over the time we've talked, yeah, you can beat talent, but you can't, you know, talent and chemistry is very hard to beat. These kids are so close, it's ridiculous. It's been the closest team I've ever coached. And they're winning a lot on chemistry as well. I mean, our goaltending's been great, making big saves when he has to. But we've won on a lot of chemistry. Kids just going out. You know, your top line has to be your top line. They have to go and create. You need your second line to be the secondary scoring. Your third line, they can't be scored on. And so, you know, everybody has a role. Everybody has to understand it. But Pete and Jack have been able to create on such a high level this year. It's been pretty special to watch, to tell you the truth, their creativity and their speed and they're selfless too. They use each other. They use everybody. So I feel that's been our hallmark all year.
These are all words that you've preached many times, Dale, when we talk with you. And, you know, your defense, you want to keep the goals down. 1.5. It's exactly where you are, goals against right now. Are there any kids on this team? And you mentioned in the Times too, I guess, to Nick Kukuru, how proud you are of this group. Are there any kids on the team that, in the course of their careers, you've had to move them from one position to another, or is it sort of that it's all kind of fallen into place with this unit?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate that, you know, I've had some kids that can jump back and play D. I got to tell you, we were very concerned going into the Gloucester game because we lost one of our freshman defensemen, Thomas Babine. He went into the boards in practice the day before. Mm-hmm. And he was slightly concussed. So we were down to 4D, and against that lineup, a heavy lineup that's going to get a PCU all the time, I got to tell you, it was unbelievable to watch. And we had them in the box a couple of times, so we were down to 3. It was incredible to watch the effort we got from our defense and our goaltending. That's what really wins us the close games, is the other side of the puck. And hopefully we can convert on some special teams. But the overall commitment to coming back was really evident. The player we usually put back there, assistant captain, he's a senior, Nate Evangelista. Mm-hmm. He's the one we would put back there to eat up those minutes, and he would do it in a heartbeat just to help. But he's out with a broken collarbone. So we really had no one that we could convert back there. So, again, the effort we got on the other side of the puck, especially from ID, who logged heavy, heavy minutes, was pretty impressive.
Coach, I imagine that it's in order to shit against 50 players around, where you go from having, you know, 6 defensemen that you can rotate in your pairings to having 2.5 lines, and now you've got to slide somebody in there. Does that make you more aware of the minutes that the 5 of them are actually playing?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question. I'm sorry. Go ahead again.
When you're down to 5 defensemen,
yep.
And do you really have to take into account the number of minutes that they're playing in order to keep them somewhat fresh throughout the game?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we were very cognizant of that. You know, we were telling our board side defensemen closest to the bench always, you got to change it first and try to stay on no longer than 30 seconds. And then when you're going on, you know, the other D has to try to switch over to the board side if we can and get him off. So, yeah, we rotated pretty quickly on that. But at times, you know, on a power play, we had 3 defensemen on the ice because I stick my 6'6" defenseman out front of the net on the power play. He scored a goal, and you're using 2 other ones back on the point. So, out of the 4 defensemen we had, 3 were on the ice at one time. So you really have to come back and watch minutes, watch what they're doing, try to slow change, try to have, you know, grab time any way you can. You really have to watch your timeout. But at the same time, you know, stalling and doing whatever you can to grab some extra time.
Before we talk about the schedule the rest of the way, Dale, I talked with Coach Hansen this week over at the prep about enjoying this time of year. And it was interesting the answer he gave. He talked about the stress of being a coach versus being a player. And he mentioned that when you're a player, when you guys played at whatever level, you're only responsible for yourself. And now as a coach, you're responsible not only for the strategy and the training of all these kids, but also how they comport themselves representing the community. And so I've got to ask you, I know you're enjoying this time of year, and so how are you feeling right now about this group?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's the best time of year. You're coming down the stretch. You know, we tell our kids, you know, they don't hand out trophies in December and January, but getting into February, you're going to be coming down to it. And these kids have reacted so well to everything we've thrown at them. And we're tough. I mean, we coach tough. I mean, you know, we want these kids to realize their accountability, their responsibility to our play. We're not depending on any one guy. We need everybody towing the same line. So they've all adapted very well. And to see our upperclassmen really encouraging our freshmen and sophomore players who are starting to get some minutes because of the necessity, it's really, you know, seeing them grow, and this group has really grown, and they're great in school, they're great out in the community, they represent themselves very well, and, you know, couldn't be more proud of them, to say the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, stress is self-inflicted, you know, pressure is self-inflicted, just go out and play. Michael was the only gave him a talk before, and I've said it all along, too, I always say play our game, but he said, you know, they weren't afraid of the Russians, they weren't afraid of anybody, as long as they played their game. They didn't try to adjust to anybody. And that's pretty much our message. If we're playing our game, let everybody adjust to us. But I think when you're chasing the game, you're chasing, trying to find your identity, that's the problem. If you establish it right away, you're not chasing anything. So I feel our kids have really adapted well to our overall philosophy and what we're trying to do out there all the time. Small hockey, keep it simple. And, again, yeah, this is a great time of year. I love it. We're coming down the stretch, and hopefully we can keep the foot on the gas.
Dale, is it an unfair advantage to call upon probably the most famous of the 1980 gold medal winners to come in and talk to your kids and give them a little pep talk?
Well, it's nice to have that experience. You know? It's great to have somebody that's gone through the biggest moment in U.S. hockey history and be captain of it. But, yeah, he shares those stories with the kids. And, it's something you can't put a price on, to tell you the truth. I mean, to have that moment and to have the person that did it from our town, come through our community, do everything he's done. The kids really, you know, they take that, you know, to heart. And, And again, he called me from Florida. Make sure you keep telling them, play your game, play your game. Don't get away from it. You know, and I said, don't worry, I will. But Mike's around all the time. He's, you know, whenever he's in town, he's always down with us. So, you know, to draw on those stories and those experiences are invaluable, to say the truth.
Dale, two of the next three games, regular final season ending. They're away games. What's the schedule look like for you guys? This last full week of regular season training?
Well, we got Masco on Wednesday night up in Haverhill, and obviously we know what that's going to bring. They're a very good hockey team, and, you know, we have to just take the next game. That's all we talk about, the next game, prepare for the next game. And it doesn't matter who the opponent is. It really doesn't matter to me because, once again, we're going back to the just play our game. So, as long as we are playing our game, hopefully we're giving ourselves a chance to win in the third period, which we've been very strong. And then we have Peabody and Saugus, and hopefully we can continue against them. And the last game of the year is against Dedham, a non-conference at home. So we're going to try to finish on a very high note heading into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, I'm looking at the records. Masco's having, well, for them, obviously, and probably a lot of people around the league, having something of a down year. you know, losing to a lot of teams that in the past were no problem to them. Do you think it's part of the growing pains of moving into the Northeastern Conference, or is it just one of those little blips that you run across?
Well, it could be a combination of both. I mean, our conference is unbelievably competitive. I was talking with Derek before the game about it. And, you know, you look at, I mean, Gloucester and us and, you know, Masco and all the other teams that are in that. It's a very, very competitive league. So when those power rankings are coming out, I mean, we're going against, you know, we're going against very good teams. Marblehead, you know, there's no real layups at all. And you can never go into a game thinking it's a layup. But I got to tell you, our conference is very competitive in Division Two. And, you know, I think we talked about this as well, about, you know, if we ever got the Cape Ann involved, we could, and, you know, we were dreaming, I think, a little bit, but having the MIA commit to maybe two more weeks of the season, have a part of our schedule in the Cape Ann, and boy, what a league that would be. But at the same time, you know, our Northeast Conference is very competitive, and I think when you're looking at all the teams, you know, when they're doing the power rankings, I mean, you know who you're going against all the time, and it's very strong.
Coach, congratulations of what you've done so far. The kids have done fantastic. We've enjoyed this, and we're going to do it again. So good luck this week.
Okay, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Dale. Take care.
Good luck, Coach.
All right, that's Dale Dunbar, who is the Winthrop High School boys hockey coach. And just a reminder, Winthrop is in D4, all right, even though they play mostly a D2 schedule. And they, you know, have Masco is next. And then after that, it is Peabody Saugus, and then they close out the season against Dedham. And by the way, Wednesday night game at Haverhill, that's a late start at 8:05. Tim and I will be back with Mike Grenier here coming up. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. We'll be back as soon as I can find the right buttons to push here. There we go. Be right back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, now we turn to our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And, Mike, first of all, welcome back. And I'm going to go right to your homework. I changed your homework assignment.
Yeah, you did.
I did. And I know Tim wants to jump in here, too. I think the last three games, I think, are signature games for this team.
Right, especially being so shorthanded. I mean, when you're talking, you know, Jaylen Brown gets his face fractured, and, you know, Marcus Smart is still out. And Malcolm Brogdon misses the game, and we know how important he's been to the team. I was very surprised to see them on Super Bowl Sunday beat Memphis is pretty much back to strength, full strength. They're in second place in the Western Conference, and the Celtics handled them. I mean, they had some problems in the third quarter, but the Celtics handled them. And they just played so well the last few games with so many guys injured.
Yeah, it's scary. One game they're missing four starters and beat a real quality team. Next time out they're missing three starters and they still win. And you look at the guys that are stepping up. White's playing out of his mind.
Oh yes,
and,
he is. Yeah.
After him it's another, you know, guy from deep on the bench that's coming in and throwing in 20 plus points.
That's right. And you know, right, Tim and Rick and Tim, I've sort of brought up a couple times Sam Hauser and how he. His three-point shot deserted him for several weeks, maybe a period of about a month and a half, where he wasn't shooting the three-point so well. And the last several games, my goodness, you know, 6 for 11 and 5 for 9, and that's a big lift, as you know, Tim, when you're coming off the bench and you're missing so many starters, when a Hauser can hit over 50% of his three-pointers, he's been magnificent. So you hope that's trending back upwards, because he was extremely good from the three-point line early in the season, had a little bit of a dip, and now he's back and shooting with a lot of confidence, and Jason Tatum has no hesitation getting the ball to him at all.
You know, that was, you know, really cool to see. I was watching the highlights last night, and it's almost like he went out of his way as he was driving towards the basket or across the court, with his head up, which is what you want guys to be doing. And if he saw Hauser open or moving to an area, that ball was just out of his hands, and Hauser was catching the ball and shooting in motion. He didn't have to cross it. It was all just one smooth motion. And, of course, you know, that really helps a shooter.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. And I think, obviously, too, Rick and Tim, Tatum knew he was not having a good shooting day yesterday. He was like 3 for 16, 0 for 8 in the second half. And so he was more than content to draw the defense to him, because he often gets doubled in teams and often triple-teamed when he goes into the lane, and kicking it out to Hauser. And Hauser has a, like Tim, like, he has an extremely quick release. And he was getting, last few games, it's been very impressive. He's not just shooting it from one particular area either. It's not like he's shooting it from the baseline or the wing. It's the top of the key. So he's been dangerous from all different areas. And, of course, that just helps the Celtics, and it baffles the opposing defenses. So that's all to the good when Hauser is shooting like that, you know. So and of course Brogdon, until he missed the game with an Achilles, you know, hopefully just a small injury. Brogdon has been playing fantastic as well. The guy is still averaging 14.5 points a game off the bench, and he's got the best 3-point shooting percentage on the team. You know, so he's been outstanding.
What do you make of the coverage of Peyton Pritchard before the trade deadline? I don't know if you read that in the Globe.
Yeah. Well, Peyton Pritchard, you know, he sort of gave an inclination that he wanted to be elsewhere because he wants more playing time. But with all these injuries cropping up, all of a sudden Peyton Pritchard's in there getting the minutes that I was hoping he was going to get all year, and he's producing. I mean, the guy is scrappy as heck. He comes down with offensive rebounds. You know, you wouldn't think he'd be able to get at his height, you know, less than about 5, he may be listed at 6 feet, but he's about 5'10 or 5'11. And he's shooting it very, very well. It's a complimentary piece when Hauser's out there. When two of them are out there, the defense really have to guard against the three, because both of them are very accurate 3-point shooters.
Yeah, you know, I was a little dabbled, you know, when I kept seeing how, you know, he's saying he wants to be traded. You know, when you're a first or second year player, you're on your rookie contract.
Right.
Keep your mouth shut. Play the game when you get the opportunity. Make the most of your minutes and see what happens. But to come out and almost try to throw a monkey wrench into the smooth running engine that the Celtics are right now. You know, I'm wondering if the coach had a little sit down with him, told him, listen, sit down, shut your mouth, and play the game.
Well, that's right. That would be Mazzulla's job. And on the other side of things, on the business side of things, I'm sure Brad Stevens might have had a talk with him. And Tim and Rick, this might be a great time to also point out that with the trade deadline coming in the middle of last week, the Celtics really strengthened themselves. This Mike Muscala, It seemed like a minor move on paper, but this guy can shoot the three. He's had several years in the league. I remember when he played with the Atlanta Hawks, he came into the Garden one night. I was at the game, and he scored like 18 or 20 points. And it's terrific to have him. He's 6'10". He can rebound a little. It's closer to 6'11", I think. He can rebound a bit. But while the Celtics were strengthening themselves with that move, Mike Muscala, the Nets basically gutted their team because, you know, Kyrie, of course, talked his way out of town. No surprise there. And then, of course, they weren't going to keep, you know, Kevin Durant around, have him unhappy because Kyrie was gone. So he's gone to the Western Conference. Kyrie's in the Western Conference. And Ben Simmons is not a factor. So that team considerably weakened itself. Miami had made zero moves. They remain status quo. And, you know, they're going to obviously be a contender, I think, in the playoffs. But they didn't really improve themselves. They just They just stood pat, and the Celtics made a move to improve themselves. I think the Eastern Conference moves helped the Celtics considerably.
I agree. And if the Celtics get healthy, you know, down the stretch, watch out. It's very interesting to see. And I don't know if I haven't been listening to talk radio at all recently, but I know over the years, when they talked about getting rid of Marcus Smart and bringing in whoever, another superstar, or trading Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant and all this other stuff. And, you know, LeBron James was forming his super teams, and players were deciding where they were going to play as super teams. To me, I'm renewed about sports when I see this kind of an experiment fail in Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, it failed miserably. And I mean, it was looking good even a couple of months ago when they were playing well and they won 9 or 10 in a row, and I had them way up there in my power ranks because they merited it at the time. But then, you know, Kyrie, of course, is more concerned about his contract than he ever would be about any kind of team he's on. It's about me first for him at all times, 100% of the time, 365 days a year. And so he basically said, I don't like my contract, the way the talks are going, the Nets aren't being transparent. Come on, give me a break. and he's making $37 million a year. So, you know, if he waits it out, he would have got a good contract, but he can't wait. So he goes to Dallas, and we'll see how that works out in the Western Conference. I don't think the Celtics have to worry about Dallas in the NBA Finals if the Celtics get that far, because Kyrie and Luka Doncic together, to me, even though, you know, the first game together, they lost, and they took 42 shots combined. The rest of the starters took like 15 shots.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I was looking at the box score, and I said to myself, this is the way it's going to be the rest of the season. So, you know, they're going to win some games, but, you know, Kyrie is where he belongs, hopefully in the obscurity of Texas. And the Celtics have to worry about the Eastern Conference. And the Milwaukee Bucks, who, of course, have been playing fantastic, 10 straight wins, and they go head-to-head with the Celtics tomorrow, guys. That'll be great in Milwaukee. And the only move they made, I don't think they even needed to make a move, but they got Jay Crowder practically for nothing, a former Celtic. And Jay Crowder hasn't played a minute all year because of injuries. And he was unhappy in Phoenix. He was unhappy in Boston, if you recall,
yep.
Rick.
Yep.
He felt disrespected. That was the word he used, disrespected in Boston, because when the Utah Jazz came in and people clapped for Gordon Hayward, I was at the game. They applauded an opposing player, and not in a vigorous way. But after that game, Jay Crowder said he felt disrespected. Oh, my goodness. And the word he used to get out of Phoenix was, I feel disrespected. So here he is joining the Bucks, who have great chemistry, but he's just going to be a minor piece for that team because they are loaded. They are loaded from top to bottom, both in the starting lineup with all the threats they have and with their bench. And Bobby Portis is still injured, and there's a guy who's averaging 15, 16 points a game. So when he comes back, they're even stronger. So, you know, I think the move doesn't hurt the Milwaukee Bucks, Jay Crowder, but I just don't think he's going to get that much playing time. I'd be surprised if he does, but I think they're the biggest threat to the Celtics by far.
But, you know, Crowder's going to be bitching about his playing time because he bitched here. He wanted to be a starter and was mad that he wasn't.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And this whole thing about disrespect, that gets me, because they're making great money, and whether you're a starter or coming off the bench and playing an important role off the bench, you're part of a team that's trying to achieve a championship or to go deep in the playoffs. And, you know, some guys just aren't happy with that particular goal in mind. You know, they want to be starting, and they want to be in first place, and they want a massive contract. And if one of those three things is missing, they gripe and they moan, and they talk their way out of town.
All right, one thing, I'm going to make a quick comment here, and then I want to get to the homework. The comment is, I watched Memphis drive to the hoop, and did the Celtics have, it's a two-part question, did the Celtics have a problem with guys who go to the basket? And it was only because they missed layups that they weren't even closer. I worry about that defense. And then secondly,
yeah.
I want you to compare or contrast this team with KG's team, because I didn't really watch that year when they won, and I'm just watching... I'm looking at the box scores, and you've got 5, 6, 7 guys while the starters are out in double figures.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Regarding the first question, I think, players sometimes, against the Celtics, they'll take it to the basket. Because, I mean, Robert Williams is kind of an undersized big man. Very quick off his feet, as we know. capable of blocking shot. But yesterday you're talking Ja Morant, who is definitely among the top four or five players in terms of agility and athleticism. I've seen him take it to the basket against 29 teams. So I'm not that concerned about that. Yesterday, he missed some layups yesterday. He's got a lot of talent surrounding him, and I see them as a threat to win the Western Conference and go very deep in the playoffs. So, but I think in yesterday's case, you just have an extraordinary player, an all-star player in Ja Morant, and he's a skinny guy who can get around defenses. He's incredibly quick, extraordinarily quick. So I think in that case, it's a one-game thing. However, you know, teams do try to go against the Celtics, big men, because, you know, Al Horford's 36 years old. But I'll tell you what, Al Horford is a very bright guy, and I've seen him block some shots on guys that were far more athletic. And, Tim, you brought up a great point at the beginning of this conversation tonight. Derek White is playing, like you said, out of his mind. His defense, Rick, I think you and I exchanged a text last week when he made that massive block, a hustle block, where he went like three-quarters of the length of the court to make a block when the guy was just going to have a layup or a dunk.
From behind.
And then the Celtics, you know, got the possession and went down the other end. And was it Howes? Somebody hit a three, and then the opposing team had to call a timeout. That is a momentum change or a game-changing type play. And the thing I liked, Rick, when they went to the timeout is that, yes, the players were congratulating the guy who hit the three, but mostly they were congratulating Derek White for starting or igniting that great play with the defensive play.
Yeah.
So it's great that they were acknowledging how important the defensive play was. To me, that's what team chemistry is all about, and bonding and all those things that you need when you're going through an 82-game season and a long playoff run.
You know, White has really benefited by the additional playing time that he's been getting because of the injuries to Marcus Smart. And that's so typical of what we talk about is being a team player, stepping up, doing the job that's expected of you, and because you're getting that opportunity, it just works out that you do even more because you're able to put on display the talent that you have. And boy, what a feeling the coaching staff and the ownership must have of picking this kid up. And you know, probably 90% of the Boston fan base went, "Who the hell is this guy?"
Yeah, because he came from San Antonio, which has not been a good team the last few years, and so nobody knows about the guys on the San Antonio roster. But you're right, Tim, in so many ways. And Rick, how about, and Tim, we mentioned his defense, Derek White's defense, and then a couple nights ago, he hits eight threes. Eight three-pointers, a career high, and he finished with a career high 33 points, I believe. So, I mean, the guy is doing it at both ends of the court. I think he's loving the extra playing time because they have missed Marcus Smart now for 10 straight games or 11 straight games. He's really fit in comfortably as a starter and as a big role player. They want him to be a big part of the offense. He's going to be a big part of the defense. And I think he's loving the spotlight, so to speak, of being in that central role of playing 28, 30, 32 minutes and having an important role in the flow of the game. I think he's playing his best ball of the season right now.
Well, he's playing fearless. You know, he gets out there, he walks in the court and is, you know, I'm here, I belong here, I'm on the starting five, and there's just that oozing of confidence that he has, and when he's bringing the ball up, and he knows what he's going to do with it, and when he gets the ball in a position, he knows he's going to be able to take the shot, this guy's going to get a rebound, or he's going to make it. He knows that he can make his shot when he takes it.
Right, right. That's good. Rick, now, you're right. Let's talk about this 2000, 2007, 2018, the last Celtics team to win a title. It doesn't seem like 15 years ago. It seems more recent than that. But there are a lot of differences between the current Celtics team, which hopes to win the championship, and the 2007-8 team that did win it. First of all, it was the core group was much older than the current Celtics core group. And let's start with the fact that team, coached by Doc Rivers in 2007-8, they went 66-16
Oof.
In the regular season. 66-16. Now, the current Celtics are not going to win 66 games. They might win the Eastern Conference, but they are not going to win 66 games. And not only that, Rick, the prior year, before they acquired Garnett. They won 24 games. 24 games. So they jumped from 24 to 66 because they also acquired Ray Allen. And so you start with the fact they went 66 and 16. And the biggest difference in the current team and that team 15 years ago is the age of the group that won the championship. Now, Ray Allen, of course, one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the NBA, was 32 years old that year, okay? Paul Pierce was 30 years old. Kevin Garnett was 31 years old. And that was balanced by the point guard, Rajon Rondo, who was just in his second year, I believe, his second year in the league at the time, 21 years old. He got a lot of assists, man. With those three guys scoring points, Allen, Garnett, and Pierce, you know, he was just a vital piece of enthusiastic young guy feeding those veterans, you know. It was great. And they also had, off the bench, we mentioned depth and the Celtics having depth. James Posey was a big part of that team. He averaged like 7.5 points a game. Eddie House, a guy who does the commentary on Celtics games now, one of the best three-point shooters in the league at the time. And he was in his prime. He was like age 29 at the time. He averaged like, you know, 7-8 points a game. Tony Allen was kind of a defensive specialist, and he also averaged like almost 7 points a game. Sam Cassell, he was the oldest guy on the team. He became an assistant coach eventually. He was 38 years old that year, and he averaged 7.6. So your core group and some of your bench guys were in that 29, 30, 31, 32 years of age group, and Paul Pierce was on a mission that year, Rick, because his reputation was as a guy who was a scorer for the big scorer for the Celtics, wasn't close to winning anything. He didn't have exactly a great reputation, but he sunk his teeth into his assignment of trying to win a title, sharing the ball, and all that. And here's another big thing, Rick, about that team. They did not score a whole lot of points per game, or like about 100 per game. They ranked 10th or 11th offensively out of 30 teams in the league, offensively. Defensively, though, Tim, they were second in the NBA, gave up only 90, almost like 91 points a game. Second, that's unheard of in today's, obviously, NBA, where everyone shoots threes. But Kevin Garnett, of course, he was really the leader in clamping down on the defense. So they had a good point differential between their offense and the defense, where they just really were a defensive-minded team, and that carried through from game one to right down to the game six in the finals against the Lakers, where they won that game by 39 points, you know? So,
the backup center that they had gotten. They'd actually gone and talked about a retirement.
Oh, yes. Well, yes, they that's right. P.J. Brown.
P.J. Brown.
And you're right, Tim. He was 38 years old. I think one of the players actually talked him into hanging around and joining the Celtics. It wasn't just Celtics management, Danny Ainge and all that. It was it might have been even Garnett and maybe Pierce talking P.J. Brown into sticking around. I remember him hitting a very big shot in the playoffs. So, yeah, they had a bunch of veterans, and that was the difference between that team and this team, which, of course, last year the Celtics, you know, within two games of winning a title with guys who were 24 and 25 years old. And, you know, so to me, those were some of the things that were different about that team, and they were far more focused on defense and stopping opposing teams, and they did a great job. But when you're only giving up 90, 91 points a game, you're going to have a chance to win a lot of games. So, and of course, Kevin Garnett's ferocity, Rick, we've talked about this, his ferocity on both the offensive and defensive end, and as a leader, he was maniacal. I used to see him even warming up, he was sweating like crazy, even in warm-ups, because he couldn't wait for the game to start. And he would get the Garden fans so riled up because of his intensity that he was borderline psycho case. You know?
Yeah, he was one of a kind. Ain't no doubt about that.
Well, like, yeah. He even took it a step further than Dave Cowens.
Hey.
Those were soul, to me, those guys, had they played together, they were soul brothers.
Great.
They would have been soul brothers on the Celtics.
Oh, absolutely. All right, great analysis, and it gives me hope that there are similarities between that team and this team, and
right.
Especially because they're younger, you know, in defense and the all the different guys. Do you have a Power Five?
Oh, sure do have a Power Five, Rick. Of course, I can't forget about the Power
Five. Let's have it.
All right, so here we go. I got to go. You know what? The Cleveland Cavaliers continue to play well. So they're my number five team. You know, they've won eight of their last 10. They're hanging around. They've been hanging around the top four or five in the Eastern Conference for months now. You keep waiting for them to sink, and they don't, okay? So they're my number five team, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then I got to go with Philly, which has tailed off just a little bit, as my number four team, okay? They're still a threat. Obviously, they're going to be they'll be heard from in the playoffs, right, Tim? There's strong team with Embiid having a great year. But right now, they're at the number four slot. Number three, I got to go with Denver, which has been so consistent. They're just, Jokic is having another great year, an MVP-type season. So they're my number three team. Now, this is where it's going to get tough, Rick, because the Celtics are playing well again. But they by an edge, to me, they have to be number two because since a week ago when we were speaking, the Bucks haven't lost. They've won 10 straight. So they're a game and a half behind the Celtics overall, but they're playing great basketball, and I can't make an argument against them as a number one team because they have won 10 straight, and they're right on the Celtics' tails.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no disagreement from me there. Again, I'm looking at the league standings, and whew, you know, they're razor thin between the two teams.
Right, exactly. You know what? I think a team that we're going to have to watch from the Western Conference because now they acquired Kevin and Durant, it will be the Phoenix Suns. Their top players were banged up. Devin Booker, however, a great, great point guard, Chris Paul, obviously. But they have Durant, and that automatically boosts their stock. They're not anywhere near the top teams yet. However, in a stretch run here, they could make a run and go on a winning streak and then be a threat in the playoffs. But the thing they don't have going for them is the fact that Durant has had multiple injuries. He's now 34 years old, and Chris Paul is up around closer to 40 years old, and he's been racked with injuries the last couple of years. But obviously, if the stars are in alignment, they could be a good team in the playoffs and a threat, let's say, to Memphis and Denver coming out of the West. But I don't see it yet, but I see some potential there in Phoenix.
Yeah, I think finally, Mike, and by the way, I'm going to give you guys off next Monday. You can both take the night off, okay?
Okay, that's nice.
what's your gut feeling about this team, the Celtics, that is?
You think about the 2018? They won it all.
Yep.
I know, I'm just kidding. My gut feeling is that I'm a little bit nervous about the depth the Milwaukee Bucks have to go along with that starting unit. I think that as good as the Celtics are, and they've been beating some really good teams, and they surprise us with shorthanded by winning games. To me, that's highly encouraging. But the Bucks have Giannis, and I don't see any team in the East, even Embiid, that can contain him. When you try to contain Giannis, you get into foul trouble, and he ends up going to the foul line anywhere from 10 to 20, 25 times a game. It's ridiculous how many foul shots he takes. And yes, he travels a lot. And yes, he piles into people and should be called for more offensive fouls. But that's not the way the game is called these days, right, Tim? He gets to the foul line. He's the refs are oblivious to his travels. And they have a lot of weaponry to go around Giannis. I mean, they did Chris Middleton, who I mentioned before, still is not starting. Pat Connaughton, our local guy, has still been in the starting lineup for like 22, 23 straight games. But Chris Middleton is starting to play more and more, and he comes off the bench and gives you 17, 18, 20. They just have an all-around powerhouse team that's going to be hard to beat, even if the Celtics finish first. I think, Rick, what's going to be one of the big keys in the final in the playoffs, the Eastern Conference, is whether the Celtics have home court advantage at the Garden. Mm-hmm. If they get home court advantage for the length, you know, for the full length of those Eastern Conference playoffs, you know, they definitely have a shot, obviously, of going to the finals. But I think having home court will be important to them.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, what do you think?
You know what most teams are lacking, Mike?
That, yeah.
To deal with a guy like Giannis? They're missing a Hank Finkel.
Oh. yeah, Hank was what a great guy he was.
He was 7'2", yeah. Big on speed. He gave you six fouls,
yep,
away, strategic points.
Yep.
And teams just don't have guys like him anymore.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, Muscala is 10, and they could waste some fouls if he plays against Giannis. But they're going to need him at the offensive end. He's actually an effective offensive player. But Milwaukee is just so well-rounded that I think they would have to be considered the favorite, even if the Celtics end up with best record. That's just my thought. I've seen the Milwaukee Bucks play a lot of games this year, and I love the head-to-head matchup tomorrow night, guys. I think that's going to be it's not going to swing, you know, where if the Celtics win it, this doesn't mean they're going to win the Eastern Conference, but I just think it's an important game for both teams.
Mike, we love your analysis as much as anybody anywhere, and you could be on ESPN or the NBA Net, whatever, because, man, you've seen it all, and I love that perspective. And now I'm wary of the Bucks. And so,
you know, I could not – if I was on ESPN, though, guys, I could not outshout Stephen A. Smith.
Well, here's the thing.
Mike, I'm sick of him.
You're a journalist, Mike. He's a performer.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But yes, but the season goes on, and there's only 25 games. And Rick, I should remind you guys, now 2 weeks ago, I said that Jason Tatum perhaps is playing too many minutes, second in the league. And all of a sudden, a couple days ago, the Globe does a story, Jason Tatum's playing too many minutes. They need him down the stretch to play fewer minutes. So, I think it's a little bit of a factor to keep our eye on, because he is up around almost 38 minutes per game.
Well, I think you and Tim Kearns have got to get more into Coach Mazzulla's ear like you did last year with Udoka, so keep it up.
Okay, so we'll talk in 2 weeks?
Yes, sir.
By then, we might have a reformed Power Five.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael.
You guys have a great week.
You as well, Mike. Good night, Mike. Oh, Tim, that's true. I mean, you guys have, you got into Udoka's ear, and you know, and they almost won the championship.
Rick, we just the crib.
What's that?
We've been around so long, you know, we're not only ahead of the curve, we're way past the curve.
All right. Okay, Coach. Listen, have a good week. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Enjoy all the time off I'm giving you guys.
Oh, yeah. I'm with the pay raise, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. Hey, no, really. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.
You good.
All right. Be well. Take care. All right. That's Tim Kearns, who was our sports analysis and analyst, rather, and extraordinaire, really. He knows all sports, and he's also our ambassador of goodwill here at MSO News Sports. Don't forget that we have the Salem News Sports Writer Sportscast dropping tomorrow around 8 o'clock, the podcast with Bill Newell hosting the Salem News sports writing staff along with Nick Kukuru. And the Salem News staff, of course, comprised of Phil Stacey, the executive sports director, the assistant sports executive sports editor, assistant sports editor, of course, Matt Williams, and reporter Nick Giannino, along with Nick Kukuru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, and Bill Newell compiling all of that, compiling our scoreboard as well on most nights. And we will have the Sports Desks program coming up on Thursday, the North Shore Sports Desk, with Dominic Nicastro and Nick Kukuru, along with the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk with Nick and Nick. And again, the big score in, the only final score I have, it's a limited high school schedule here this evening. You can see it on our website right under this button here where you can listen to the game, listen to the live sportscast. Catholic Memorial has beaten St. John's Prep 5-3. I think it says 3-3 up there on the scoreboard. But Memorial has won the Catholic Conference. They win it 5-3, and I'll be changing that score in just a second here when we get off. That's the only final score that we have. There are a lot of hockey games, some hockey games going on tonight. Swampscott is at Rockport, Gloucester playing at Marblehead. Newburyport is at BC High, North Reading at Northeast. In girls hockey, Gloucester is hosting Billerica. Boys basketball, the Prep at St. Mary's. Girls basketball, Georgetown at Salem. Essex Tech at Hamilton Wenham. Lintech at Chelsea. We should have scores on those later on this evening. But again, the big one, Catholic Memorial 5, St. John's Prep 3, CM wins the Catholic Conference title this year. Those teams were rated 2-1 respectively, with Memorial 2, St. John's Prep 1 in the most recent MIAA power rankings in D1 hockey. And I'm sure the new rankings will be coming out pretty soon, probably tomorrow, I'm guessing. Anyway, thanks for being with us. Spread the word. You can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com. Thank you for being with us. On behalf of Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good evening.